will apologize before I call the next case, which includes a party whose name I guarantee I will mispronounce. The case is Atembanimi versus State of Minnesota. And counsel, I'm sure you will correct me with my mispronunciation as you commence your argument. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument, with appellant's counsel having an additional 5 minutes to use for rebuttal if you choose to use that time. The timing restrictions are indicated in the light and the clock in the lectern, which, by the way, you can raise or lower. There's a button right in front, and it automatically elevates and descends to match your height at your convenience. Whenever you're ready to commence your argument, counsel for appellant, you may. One more thing I'll just mention. We keep track of the audio record, keep track of the argument by audio recording, so please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, opposing counsel, Mr. Olson. My name is Chelsea Willett, and I represent appellant Raymond Atembanimi. The issue before the court today is whether Mr. Atembanimi received ineffective assistance of counsel when his attorney failed to advise him on the day of his guilty plea that he would be automatically deported as a result of the plea. It's undisputed in this case that Mr. Atembanimi was mandatorily deportable as a result of this plea. Despite this, the record contains uncontroverted evidence that Mr. Blackmar, Mr. Atembanimi's attorney, advised him on the day of the plea that ICE will most likely deport, but that he could challenge that deportation in immigration court. This is important because this happened on the day of the plea, and that goes directly to the intelligence of the guilty plea. And an unintelligent plea is what resulted in this case, and that is a manifest injustice, which is why we are requesting that Mr. Atembanimi be permitted to withdraw his guilty plea in this matter. Mr. Atembanimi received ineffective assistance because under Padilla v. Kentucky, it requires that when immigration consequences are truly clear, as they were here, that the counsel's advice needs to be equally clear. And counsel's advice in this case was not clear. In fact, it was contradictory and misleading.
What exactly would counsel have had to say to make it clear enough to satisfy Padilla in this case and still be accurate?
Yes. What counsel would have needed to advise Mr. Atembanimi on the day of the plea was that he would be mandatorily deportable or automatically deportable, that he would be deported as a result guilty plea.
Would be deportable and would be deported are two different things.
Automatically deportable, Your Honor, or would be deported. So basically,
automatically deportable. I guess that's where I'm lost. And I kind of sympathize with defense counsel who have to advise accurately without overstating the force of law. And in this environment where individuals who are deportable are not always deported, even if they are automatically deportable. So what does the law require if someone is deportable by law but not necessarily going to be deported? How is that inconsistent with the advice that was allegedly provided?
Because here, Your Honor, it was made very clear by the Immigrant Law Center consultant that Mr. Blackmar was in touch with prior to the plea that Mr. Atembanimi would be deported, mandatorily deportable. And it's not, deportable versus deported.
Terms. I mean, so a lawyer says to his client,
yes,
you're most likely going to be deported. Or instead, you are definitely deportable. Explain the substantive difference between those two statements.
Those two statements may be similar, but in this case, what he should have said was, you will be deported. If you plead guilty to identity theft in this amount, you will be deported.
What if he said, you will be deportable? as a matter of law, if you plead guilty, you will be deportable. Would that be accurate?
It would not be accurate, Your Honor. What?
I thought that you said it.
And exactly I may have misspoken earlier, but I believe that in this case, because the result of the guilty plea was that he would be deported, and the Immigrant Law Center consultant made that very clear that there was no challenging the deportation in this case, that once he got to the immigration court, she says in the email, which was an exhibit below at the evidentiary hearing, she says in that email that he would be deported and that that judge would have no choice, that that judge would basically have their hands tied at that point due to the fact that he pled guilty to that specific crime of identity theft in that amount.
The district court made a finding that Mr. Blackmar did basically what you're saying he should have done, right? At the bottom of page 4 of the order, Mr. Blackmar testified, and the court finds credible that he recalled having a discussion with petitioner where he advised him that he would be deported if he pled guilty, as that was what Ms. Stueman advised.
Yes, Your Honor. The district court does credit Mr. Blackmar's testimony, and the district court does find him to be credible. But if true, she did not reach the issue of what happened on the day of the plea, which is the most critical issue here. And unfortunately, that's what the court was silent on.
Is there case law that addresses this, the idea that there are multiple representations made to a defendant, one of which includes the representation that is required by law? You seem to be suggesting that none of those representations before matter if there's some qualification in the language in the latest representation or the latest advice given. Do I understand that that's the gist of your argument in your brief and today?
Correct, Your Honor. And this does appear to be an issue of first impression. We were unable to find any cases where a defendant had been given one piece of advice at one point in time and then something different on the day of the guilty plea. But my argument is that...
It'd be different. What if it's different but consistent?
I would argue that this is an inconsistent.
So if I say to someone, you are deportable and you will be deported, in what way are those two statements inconsistent?
Deportable would give the impression that there is hope that you may not be deported, which is exactly what Mr. Blackmar told Mr. Atumbaname on the day of the plea, is that ICE will most likely deport. If you tell somebody most likely or you're deportable, then that does give the impression that they may not be deported.
What if it all happened in one context, in one sitting, where counsel says, you know, if you plead guilty, you will be deported. If you plead guilty, you're most likely going to be deported. If you plead guilty, you are deportable. Consistent or not consistent?
I would say inconsistent, because the first piece was you will be deported. If you plead guilty, you will be deported.
The evidence here that the first discussion was 9 months, was it, before the
correct
plea?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the claim that you're making is that the lawyer hedged his words somewhat by the time he got to the plea.
Correct. That 9 months later, on June 10th, 2015.
What originally was you will be deported became...
ICE will most likely deport, but you could challenge it in immigration court.
Which is more of an invitation to the defendant to plead guilty.
Correct, which is why his guilty plea that day was unintelligent. He believed that there was a chance that he may not be deported, but if the decision was made, he could still challenge that in immigration court, when in reality, according to the Immigrant Law Center, there was no chance that he could even challenge that in immigration court. That at that point, he would be deported. And ultimately, that is what happened. Mr. Atumbaname was taken into custody within 3 months of his guilty plea, never saw his family again, and was deported. And so we know that he was mandatorily deported at that point. And again, that goes to the intelligence of his plea, which is significant because, of course, we know pleas need to be knowing, voluntary, intelligent, accurate. And to have an unintelligent plea as here would result in a manifest injustice, as it did. And it's very clear that Blackmar told him or advised him on the day of the guilty plea, June 10th, 2015, that he would most likely be deported but could challenge it in immigration court. We know that because at the evidentiary hearing, Mr. Blackmar himself read the note onto the record. He read that it was dated, it was his handwriting, June 10th, 2015, and he acknowledged that on that date, he told Mr. Atambaname, you will most likely be deported, but you can
but
challenge
it. But the trial
it.
Court here didn't... Are we faced with a finding the trial courts make, the trial court makes here on, and based on credibility?
The court does give credibility to Mr. Blackmar, but again, even if it's true, Mr. Blackmar is credible, the court is silent as to what happened on the day of the plea, which in this case is the most important piece of evidence we have here. And that's what the court was silent with regards to, what happened on the day of the plea. That goes directly to the intelligence of the plea, not something that Mr. Atambaname was told 9 months prior. We have to look to what he was told on that day. And what he was told on that day was different from the information he was given previously.
The trial court doesn't seem to find a difference.
The trial court actually was silent with regards to anything that took place on the day of the guilty plea. There's nothing in the order that mentions Mr. Blackmar's note that he read verbatim on the record several times, and there's nothing with regards to whether Mr. Atambaname understood on the day of the plea that he would likely be deported or whether it was that he would be deported. We know from the note that he was told that he will likely be deported, which again is very different from you will be deported, period.
I assume that whether somebody is deported depends on, there's a few different components to that
Correct.
Question. I mean, first is whether the law either allows it or requires it, but there's also a step which I guess it depends upon the probability that the enforcement authorities will become aware and choose to pursue, you know, to apply the law or to enforce the law. I mean, I'm guessing that there are people out there who are deportable who aren't deported because either they're if the enforcement authorities are unaware of where they are or for reasons of prosecution. It's sort of like the discretion of the agency to prioritize and so on. So I think that the email from Ms. Stuhlman is very clear in saying that the law is clear that, you know, if he engages with the enforcement process, there will not be a good result. But does she say anything there about the likelihood or probability that enforcement authorities will, you know, choose to attempt to enforce the law against him? Or is that anywhere else in the record?
I am not aware of that in the record. What I would just say is that certainly there's always a chance that Immigration and Customs Enforcement may not find the person, but we know that if and when they do, he will be deported, which is exactly what happened in this case. I think that I don't know whether Mr. Atambaname just wasn't lucky, but I know that he was 100% going to be deported as soon as he got to immigration court, and that's what happened.
What are you asking us to do? with the district court's determination that the district court found your client not credible in the representations made about what he was advised?
Regardless of whether or not Mr. Atambaneme was found credible, what we're asking is that, given that this is an ineffective assistance of counsel claim, that this court review this case de novo and consider the full record.
Right, but when it comes to the fact findings, I mean, we don't consider de novo credibility determinations by the district court. The district court heard your client say, this is what I was told, and based upon your client's representations, which you're echoing in your argument, your position is that he wasn't provided with sufficient information to satisfy Padilla. But if the district court says, I don't believe Mr. Atumbane, or Atumbaneme, then on what basis would we reverse?
On the basis that Mr. Blackmar's own testimony, Mr. Blackmar's own notes that he acknowledged he wrote on the day of the plea, were that he advised Mr. Atambaneme on that day that he will likely be deported, but that he could challenge it in immigration court. That's the evidence we have of what conversations were had between Mr. Atambaneme and Mr. Blackmar on the day of the plea. So we'd ask the court to look at that. As Mr. Atambaneme received...
I think your time has expired.
Yes.
But you will have 5 minutes of rebuttal time.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel for the state.
Thank you. Dane Olson appearing on behalf of the state. In the ongoing previous section, the court, I think, hit on the key points of this case. One is the credibility determinations of the district court. The district court in this case found Mr. Blackmar's testimony that he did provide the advice, he did provide a copy of the written advice that was received regarding whether or not the appellant was mandatorily deportable.
And the timing of that advice?
The timing of that advice, according to the testimony at the hearing, as well as the copies of emails and the advice itself that was submitted, Mr. Blackmar originally made his inquiry, I believe, in September of 2014. For that advice, there were several emails going back and forth to provide the necessary information to this law center. They subsequently provided him with a copy of that advice, I believe, in approximately March of 2015, if my recollection is correct, and that he reviewed that then subsequently with appellant and provided him with a copy of that. We did not go into further specifics regarding the timing of that.
Well, I believe Mr. Blackmore testified, I'll quote, I would have made sure that he understood what they were telling him. I would have made sure that he had no questions before we proceeded with a plea or otherwise proceeded with the case. And in another place he refers to, he wouldn't have, I think he referred to plea negotiations. He wouldn't have entered into plea negotiations without having told him, which would indicate, or at least suggest, that he delivered this information before there was even negotiation for a plea.
The state had originally made the offer with a previous attorney in this case to the state's initial offer. Mr. Blackmar was not the original attorney on the file. He came on the file later. So he had received the state's offer. We had not discussed further discussions on that issue because he wanted to receive that immigration advice, and we did continue this proceeding more than once so that he could get that advice before we could look at entering a plea in the case. So procedurally, that was one of the reasons why there were
kind
multiple
of a plea
hearings.
What negotiation was this at the day of the plea?
The original offer that the state had made was made some months in advance of this. The plea agreement that was entered into is the defendant agreed to enter a plea of guilty to the identity theft charge of over 8 victims. And the state would dismiss count 2, and we would argue sentencing. The state argued at the time of sentencing for a commit to the Commissioner of Corrections, as that was the guideline sentence in the case. Mr. Blackmar successfully argued for a departure. So the negotiated plea was essentially the state's offer was plead to one count, dismiss the other count.
Is the term deportable, is that a term of art from federal law? Or is that just a word that attorneys use to describe the possibility of deport?
I have not practiced in federal immigration court, so I do not know if they have a different meaning. In criminal court, when we say deportable, usually we are referring to eligible to be deported.
Which then begs the question, I guess. To me, it begs another question, which is whether the administrative agency with authority to deport somebody will choose to do so.
And that is not something typically I've ever, at least in my experience of practicing in state criminal court, something that we can always guarantee. We don't know, frequently don't know who immigration will decide to take enforcement actions against necessarily. They don't always pick up, at least at the courthouse, every single person they could potentially be picking up at the courthouse. How they make that determination, I don't know.
You don't go into any analysis in your brief, and I'm wondering whether you have a response to it today, this argument that there is a material distinction, a difference between likely to be deported, eligible to be deported, and will be deported. What, if anything, is the legal significance between giving either of those pieces of advice as it relates to Padilla?
I think one of those assumes a specific outcome of a separate proceeding. Tell someone that they are automatically deportable.
No, I mean, I know what they say. I'm just trying to get a sense of whether there's a legally significant difference as you've looked at the case law. What language is necessary?
I did not see in my review of the case law any distinction made between those two determinatives in advice that's given to the main thrust of Padilla seems to be to make sure people are aware that this is an issue for them in the case, that they have an ample opportunity to investigate.
Well, I don't think Padilla just says you have to tell the defendant that this is an issue.
Well, and
Padilla gives an indication of what is supposed to be said. So what have you found in the language of Padilla and the case law applying Padilla that would inform us that what is required of an attorney in the circumstances here?
And that the attorney then, the last part of that was then that the attorney then give them the specific advice on point if it can be determined. There's some case law under Padilla that the outcome's not always necessarily determinable by trial counsel. That's not the case here.
What case do you point to that gives us the best indication of what language ought to be used in this circumstance?
I did not find a case on point that specifically talked about the exact language to be used in providing this advice. I think that's one of the issues in the case.
Understanding is that there are a number of cases that tend to suggest maybe not what language we use, but what information needs to be conveyed. So what do the cases tell us the information that must be conveyed?
The information that is to be conveyed, if the consequences of the plea are truly clear under federal immigration law as to what the outcome will most likely be, then that specific advice has to be given to the individual. If it's not specifically clear what the outcome will be, then obviously the attorney can't give advice as to what the prospective information is. Here, Mr. Blackmar provided the information in the letter from the Immigrant Law Center The note that is referred to from the date of the plea, Mr. Blackmore stated at the time of the hearing, was not a transcript of what he had told his client. It was a summarization for note purposes so he could recall the conversation. So it's difficult to drill down, which is one of the things I think the district court took into consideration in making the findings that they made, that the defendant was, in fact, properly advised prior to his plea of the consequences of that plea, and ultimately finding him, appellant, not credible because other than his own testimony, there was nothing in the record that in fact supported that position, and in fact multiple things to the contrary. So I think there is somewhat of a distinction to be made, telling somebody you will absolutely be deported is different than telling someone that they're automatically deportable, because the one assumes the outcome of the immigration proceeding and the enforcement process, which is not something within the control of any of the parties in the criminal case. Lawyers don't like to deal in absolutes for things that are beyond their control. I believe Mr. Blackmore was clear when he provided his the opinion that the defendant would be subject to mandatory deportation and automatically deportable. So I don't believe that the advice that's summarized in the notes is inconsistent. I also don't think there's any distinction between somehow the advice on the day of the plea being the sole determinative factor in advice that's given to a client over the entire course of a representation. There's no case law that says that is the key information or the only information that really counts for what a client is told by their attorney.
Well, it is the pivotal moment.
It is, but there are a number of things that come into a representation of leading up to that ultimate point that are reviewed with a client. The factors that we determine have to be reviewed on that date typically stem from direct consequences or specific case law that requires that notice on that day. At this point, I have not read a case or am familiar with a case that requires the notification or this notification to have occurred on that day specifically, and that there be a record of that notification specifically made as part of the plea. Padilla says you have to give this advice, but it also says this is still a collateral consequence, and so that a full record of what that advice isn't at this point required on the record at the time of the plea hearing. And so that puts the state in a unique position, because much of what goes into that determination are not factors that the state is privy to, as it involves attorney-client privilege. Also, the state has a limited ability to make those inquiries as a part of a plea because the information, to try to ask that information creates other potential issues of the state than trying to get something that potentially could be incriminating if, in fact, the person is not documented for being within the United States. So it creates a bit of a tricky issue there. At this point, though, there is no case law that requires that specific conversation to occur on the record at the time of the plea. It requires the information to be provided in advance of the plea, but there is no case law that says what the timing for that or that it must be the day of the plea.
At the hearing, did Mr. Blackmore testify why he wrote in his notes, "Can challenge in immigration court"? Or what that meant, or did he elaborate on that at all?
I'm attempting to recall the testimony. I don't recall him going into that in great detail, but I thought he had made reference to he would still be he would still have an opportunity for immigration proceedings as far as a review prior to deportation. It wasn't like he was just going to get picked up, put on a plane, and shipped. He still had the right to due process in that system. But I don't recall specifically.
There's also
a great deal of elaboration on that.
In his notes are the words, risk is low. Did he testify what that meant?
That statement actually is a statement that was taken out of context at looking at the note. Respondent in their brief, I specifically outlined the context of that. In that context, he's referring to the plea negotiation. He's referring to his risk of being committed to prison as being low.
And he testified to that?
I believe so, but that was the context of where that note occurred in his notes, is a discussion of the state's offer, plea of guilty. We also had specific conversations with the district court judge on that issue on that date, because he made it well known that he was going to be asking for a departure, and the court had indicated it was favorable to those arguments, not necessarily that it would guarantee them, but it was sympathetic to them. If there's nothing further, I see my time has just about expired.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for Mr. Atembaneme. Did I get it?
Yes.
All right.
I just have a couple of points to make with regards to the state. Chelsea Willett, attorney for Mr. Atembaneme, appellant. The email from Ms. Stuhlman, which is dated September 19th of 2014, makes it very clear that Mr. Atembaneme is subject to mandatory detention and deportation. And those are the words from her email. She says that the judge will have no choice but to take away permanent residency, and that he will not have an opportunity to readjust or become a citizen or appeal that decision at that point. He's subject to mandatory deportation. And that was from September of 2014. I think it's very significant that what he was told on the day of the plea was different.
When you say what he was told on the day of the plea, what are you referencing specifically, the notes or testimony about the note?
I'm referencing both, Your Honor, because the
What's the testimony about the note that most supports your proposition that the note is essentially a verbatim reflection of what was told at the time of the plea?
What the note reflects is what Mr. Blackmar told Mr. Atembaneme on the day of the plea, and he testified at the evidentiary hearing that that was his note that was contemporaneous with his discussion with Mr. Atembaneme on the day
of the plea. No, I understand that he testified that this is his note, and he testified that he spoke to Mr. Atembaneme, and the note reflects something about that conversation. What I'm trying to get a sense of is, what is the testimony that would tie you're asking us, I think, to reach a conclusion that the note essentially is a verbatim reflection of what was said, and this is what was told. What is the testimony that supports that proposition?
Mr. Blackmar at the evidentiary hearing did not testify as to whether he meant to tell him write down, I told him he would be deported. But words mean something. And when you write down something like, ICE will most likely deport, it's reasonable to assume that that was the advice that was given that day.
Well, maybe reasonable to, that's one reasonable conclusion. But it's not the only reasonable conclusion in light of what was testified to as to being told to your client specifically from the communication about deportability previously.
Mr. Blackmar, at no time during the hearing, testified that he told him on the day of the plea, or even specifically when he may have told him, that he was subject to mandatory deportation. The email itself came up in the hearing. However, he just referenced speaking with him several times regarding that, but not exactly when.
In order to reverse, do we have to agree that, well, won't we have to construe as a matter of fact something the district court did not construe as a matter of fact, which is that the statement written in the notes by counsel is in fact what counsel communicated at that time of the plea?
We don't know what the district court construed with regards to that note or with regards to Mr. Blackmar's testimony about June 10th, 2015.
Well, the district court did not find, as a matter of fact, that those notes represented a verbatim or close to verbatim communication.
The district court made no findings with regard to that note.
Right. So are you asking us essentially to make that finding that the district court did not make?
We are asking you to make that finding that Mr. Blackmar, according to, again, his own notes that he testified, they were his notes, his handwriting from the day of the plea, that is what he advised his client, was that he will most likely be deported, but that he could challenge it in immigration court. Mr. Atambaneme received ineffective assistance of counsel because the record shows that on the day of the plea, that is what Mr. Blackmar told him, was that most likely deport, can challenge an immigration court. We know that information was untrue because we have the email from Ms. Stuhlman, and that incorrect information resulted in Mr. Atambaneme's unintelligent plea, which is a manifest injustice. So we respectfully request that the judge's order be reversed and that Mr. Atambaneme be permitted to withdraw his guilty plea. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Willett, and thank you, Mr. Olson, for your argument and for your briefing in this matter. The case is now submitted. We will issue our opinion within our statutory period. We do have one more case on for oral argument, but that case is going to be submitted by Interactive Television. So while that is being set up, we are in recess.